Someone has said, love is the only ingredient of which our world never tires, and of which there is never an abundance. The world will never outgrow its need for love. Someone else has said, we live by encouragement and we die without it, slowly, sadly, and angrily. On today's edition of Focus on the Family, we want to offer an abundance of both encouragement and love as we say thank you to a very important person. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson.
Well, Mike, given the fact that Focus on the Family is a family ministry,
seems appropriate,
which depends very heavily on the role that mothers play, I think it's entirely appropriate for us to devote this broadcast to honoring mothers and to tell them that they're appreciated and loved. I had a mother tell me just the other day with great emotion in her voice how much she appreciated Focus on the Family reaching through these microphones and kind of putting an arm around mothers who are out there and saying, we care about you. You're doing an incredibly important job. And I really believe that. The mothers are our greatest national resource. And to say to them, the job you're doing is absolutely irreplaceable. We need to stop and do that frequently here on this broadcast. So I know there are a lot of sacrifices involved in raising kids. There are many frustrations that come with that responsibility of changing diapers and giving baths and running a taxi cab and doing the homework and all those kind of good things. So it is very appropriate that we take a day here at this time of the year specifically to honor mothers. And we have some very unique ways of going about that. I think if people will stay with us, they're going to enjoy what we've prepared today.
Oh, I think they will. And the first ingredient is a book that I read a number of years ago. I'd forgotten this. In our church, on a Mother's Day Sunday, they had asked me if I would read the content of the book, and a little multimedia was put together so there were pictures up on the screen. And I'll tell you, there wasn't a dry eye in that congregation.
You stood up in front of the congregation.
I actually did. They allowed me to stand in front of the group and share this story.
Well, the title of the story is Love You Forever. It's a small book, but it's a very powerful little book. It's written by Robert Munch. I believe that's the way he pronounced his name, M-U-N-S-C-H. He's an internationally famous author, even though I don't know how to pronounce his name. He has 15 books, and the illustrations in this book are by Sheila McGraw, and it's published by Firefly Publications. And it begins, I'm going to read it. It's a short book, and we don't do this very often, but I think this is worth it. A mother held her new baby and very slowly rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she held him, she sang, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. Well, the baby grew, and he grew, and he grew, and he grew. He grew until he was 2 years old, and he ran all around the house. And he pulled all the books off the shelves, and he pulled all the food out of the refrigerator. And he took his mother's watch, and he flushed it down the toilet. And sometimes his mother would say, this kid is driving me crazy. But at nighttime, when that two-year-old was quiet, she opened the door to his room, crawled across the floor, looked up over the side of his bed, and if he was really asleep, she picked him up and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she rocked him, she sang, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. Well, the little boy grew, and he grew, and he grew, and he grew, and he grew until he was 9 years old. And he never wanted to come in for dinner. He never wanted to take a bath. And when Grandma visited, he always said bad words. Sometimes his mother wanted to sell him to the zoo. But at nighttime, when he was asleep, the mother quietly opened the door to his room, crawled across the floor, and looked up over the side of the bed. And if he was really asleep, she picked up that 9-year-old boy and rocked him back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And while she rocked him, she sang, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. And the boy grew and he grew and he grew and he grew. He grew until he was a teenager. He had strange friends and he wore strange clothes and he listened to strange music. And sometimes the mother felt like she was in a zoo. But at nighttime, when that teenager was asleep, the mother opened the door to his room and crawled across the floor and looked over the side of the bed. If he was really asleep, she picked up that great big boy and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she rocked him, she sang, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be." That teenager grew, and he grew, and he grew, and he grew. He grew until he was a grown-up man, and he left home and got a house across town. But sometimes on dark nights, the mother got into her car and drove across town. And if all the lights in her son's house were out, she opened his bedroom window, crawled across the floor, and looked up over the side of his bed. If that great big man was really asleep, she picked him up and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she rocked him, she sang, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be." Well, that mother, she got older. She got older and older and older. And one day she called up her son and said, "You better come see me because I'm very old and sick." So her son came to see her, and when he came in the door, she tried to sing the song. And she sang, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always." But she couldn't finish because she was too old and sick. The son went to his mother and he picked her up and he rocked her back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And he sang this song, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my mommy, you'll be." When the son came home that night, he stood for a long time at the top of the stairs. Then he went into the room where his very new baby daughter was sleeping. He picked her up in his arms and very slowly rocked her back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while he rocked her, he sang, "I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be." Isn't that a great story?
I love that story. I was just sitting here thinking as you read it, you've been through all of those phases.
Oh, I have. I have, Mike. It's emotional to me. It's a very simple story, but there's love on every page, mm-hmm. and it does remind me of rocking back and forth, getting up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning with our kids and taking turns. Shirley'd get up one night, I'd get up the next, and changing those diapers and feeding the baby and then sitting there in the middle of the night rocking back and forth.
Right.
And the only difference is I can't sing. I would wake the baby up if I tried to sing.
I can remember many times when the house was in turmoil and the girls were giving us a hard time. But at night when they were asleep, we always loved them just a little bit more as they laid there so quiet and so peaceful and so beautiful.
Mike, have you ever done what she said? Have you ever slipped into the nursery or the bedroom of the child long after they'd gone to sleep and just knelt there beside the bed?
Yeah, I have.
Laid your hands on that child
mm-hmm.
and said, "Lord, make me a good father.
Mm-hmm.
Lord, help me raise this child correctly." It's such an awesome responsibility. I mean, there is no greater task in living than to introduce that child to the God who made him or her and to prepare them for a life of service to mankind. I mean, that's the highest goal in living for me. And I do look back with fond memories on my own time in a rocking chair.
That was one of the reasons why I've said in past years to Nancy that I envied her being at home and spending that extra time and being there when the girls would come home from school and sending them off to school in
the
morning.
How long have you tried to do that job, Mike? Have you really ever tried it for very long?
Maybe when you don't do it, you just see the real importance of it all, though, and you don't
right.
you don't experience the nitty-gritty. So that's what we're talking about today, the importance of a mom. It also makes me Think back on those special times when I was much younger with my own mom. I'm sure there were moments that I don't remember when she crept into the room and picked me up as a son.
You have spoken many times about how you feel about your mom.
I have.
Mike, and I identify with it because I have the same feelings about my mother. I look forward to seeing her again in heaven someday. Let's turn a corner now, and we're going to allow our listeners to hear a little bit of tape that I think is really going to be enjoyable. This is a portion of a recorded message given by Mary Glenn Peoples, who's been a guest on this broadcast before. This was a seminar, or a portion of a seminar, that she gave called Parenting an Air-Raising Experience, H-E-I-R.
Yes, not
Air-Raising
right.
Experience. You almost have to see that in print, don't you? These comments are just about 11 or 12 minutes long, but they will grab you and pull you in, I guarantee you.
They
that.
Sure will. We'll focus in on that portion that really applies to what we're doing today, and that's recognizing mothers.
It was Mark that gave us all the trouble because he's like me. He's the mouth. You know, he's the one that follows you around the house all the time saying, can I go? No. Why? I don't want you to. Well, everybody else is going. Well, you're not. I remember when he was a senior in high school, he came in one day and he said, Mother, can I go to Florida on the senior trip? And I said, sure, Mark, I'll go with you. He said, Mom, there are no mothers going. I said, there is one. He said, Mother, I cannot believe you would do that to me. I said, believe it. He said, Mom, I'm so sick of you. I'm so sick of this house. I'm so sick of these rules. I'm so sick of you making a fool out of me. I'm getting out of here, Mother. Do you hear me? Can I go? I said, no, unless I go. You can't go. Why? Don't you trust me? I said, Mark, I've been to Florida. I know what's down there. I know what they're doing. Well, Mother, I hate you. I want you to know I hate you. I'm so sick of you. I'm so sick of everything. I'm sick of God and Christianity. Boy, he just let me have it that day. And I remembered that being a mother requires a sacrifice. So I went in the bathroom. That's the only place he wouldn't follow me. And I locked the door. And I bowed my head and I prayed and I said, oh God, I'm so sick of him. I'm so sick of his mouth. I'm so sick of him following me around the house. And he stands outside the door and he says, I hate you, Mother. And I said, oh God, please forgive me for being sick of him. Please forgive me for being ready to get rid of him. Because you know, God, at this moment in time, that big boy out there needs a mother that understands. He needs a mother that loves him. So, God, please change my heart. And I remember I came out of the bathroom and he kept following me around. Mother, I'm telling you, you better listen. I'm getting out of here. He finally got tired of screaming at me and he went down to his room. And he came up later and he said, Mom, you want me to take out the garbage? Hey, Mom, you want me to go to the store for you? You know what he was doing? He was apologizing to me. Now, that is not the way I wanted him to do it. I wanted him to crawl down the aisle, bleed. I wanted him to suffer. And I read Proverbs 31, which says, if you raise your children right, they'll call you blessed. I'm waiting. They didn't call me blessed yet. But I remembered that all we like sheep have gone astray. Each has turned to his own way. And so I stood in my kitchen that day and I realized that this is his way of apologizing. And it's not mine, it's his. Well, I decided that if that was his way, that would be good enough for me. Now you say, what happened to the trip to Florida? Well, I didn't go. My husband went. Because when he came home and he found out, he said, you're not going down there with all those kids. I'll go. So he went. You know, until this day, Mark's never said anything about that. His daddy went and took books and tapes, canceled a conference he had, because he knew it was more important that he spend those few days in Florida with his son. So he canceled his plans and he went down there. And I don't know, I keep forgetting to talk to Mark about it, but I can imagine that because his dad was there, he knew better than to get into some kind of trouble he might have gotten in. And I cannot imagine him saying, no, I don't want that beer, I don't want that drink, because my mama told me not to. Can you imagine a 17-year-old linebacker saying that? But I think it'd been a lot easier to say, God, my dad's down here. If he catches me, I'm dead. So I don't know what went on, but he hadn't complained. Now, it was a sacrifice that day to ask God to forgive me when I was being talked to so ugly. I didn't deserve that. And I want you to know, Mark didn't move out till he was 26. And he didn't get married till he was 29. Married a lovely girl, beautiful girl. And after the wedding, we came out of the church and they had a big black limousine with the driver. And, you know, the works, beautiful wedding, everything wonderful. And there Mark stood with Nancy and he was holding her hand. And we came down the steps of the church and I thought, what are they doing still here? They should be gone. Why haven't they left? Sam and I walked down the steps and Mark dropped Nancy's hand and he stepped forward and picked me up in his arms. And he just hugged me so tight. He didn't say a word, but he hugged me. But you know, I knew I wouldn't have another chance to have a relationship with him like I'd had in the past. And he said to me, as he went away to start his own family, I love you, Mom. And I stood there as that card disappeared, and I said in my heart, oh, thank you, God, for the bathroom. Thank you so much for the bathroom that I went in there and I asked you to forgive me. Because, you see, I haven't seen Mark change. But you changed me. And you know, God, if you hadn't changed my heart all these years, I know what Mark would say today. He would say, let's get out of here, Nancy. Let's get away from her, Nancy. But he said, I love you. What better thing, what better reward could you ever have? And several years later, we were up in Huntsville, Alabama, in a Hilton Hotel, and the phone rang at 6 o'clock in the morning. It was Mark, and he said, Mom, can you and Dad come home? And I said, yeah, what's going on? And he said, well, Nancy, the baby's due in about 3 hours, and I wish you'd come home. So we got in the car, and we drove down to Birmingham, about a two-hour drive, and we got there, and we paced the floor, you know. Mark was back there with her, and in a few minutes, we had three little grandsons, and Mark knew I wanted a girl so bad. Just any old girl will do. Just give me a girl. And I looked through that door, you know, that swinging door with the little glass there, and I saw Mark in his green suit. He came running down the hall, and he pushed open those swinging doors, and he grabbed me up in his arms, and he said, Mom, it's a girl. And he put me down, and he went tearing back to Nancy. And we didn't see him anymore. We got in the car and drove back to Huntsville. We said, what is that all about? What a reward for the sacrifice. He just wanted to be able to touch me and tell me what happened. And that little girl is just the apple of all of our eyes, you know? I mean, the three little cousin boys and all the aunts and uncles, we got a girl, and she's wonderful. She's just wonderful. And Mark just adores her, and she just says, that's my dad. She's 2 and a half, and I had her Thursday, and I said, when your daddy comes, I'm going to say, don't come in here. And she's going to say, oh, you can't, that's my dad. I said, oh, but he's going to take you home, and I'll miss you. So we just kind of hope that we can live long enough to see her want to go to Florida.
Oh, that's a wonderful story, Mike.
Mary Glenn Peoples,
she can really tell a story. And so much is going through my mind as I'm listening to her talk about that. I remember a precise moment like that in my life as a teenager when I began to push my mother like that. And my dad was an evangelist, and he was out there someplace, and my mother was trying to raise this adolescent by herself who was suddenly getting testy. Now, I never really went through the bad rebellion. I never drank, and there wasn't anybody using drugs in those days. And Shirley and I were both virgins when we got married, and I'm proud of that fact. But I was pushing her. I was pressing her. And there was some issue. I don't remember the exact details, but, boy, it came to a head one night. I was 16 years of age, and she sat down that night. I knew she was writing. I didn't know what she was writing. She wrote a letter to my dad. And at the end of the next meeting that he had, he got on a train and he came home. And I knew that there was something up and I didn't know what it was.
Right.
And very shortly thereafter, my dad left the evangelistic field, which was his calling.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a pastorate 700 miles south. And we moved down there because he knew, and my mother knew, that at that critical time that I needed them. That I needed him as well as my mother. And all of his career plans, he had a four-year slate of revival meetings. He was a prominent evangelist in our denomination at that time. Four-year slate, he canceled it because I had a need. You know, just as Mary Glenn was talking there about her husband canceling a meeting and going to Florida with her son. When you've got teenagers, you sometimes need to be willing to make a sacrifice to save them, because my mom and dad saw that I could be lost right there in that period of time. I could get into things that would have affected the rest of my life. So my dad was willing to do that. We sold our house, packed up a moving van, and went 700 miles south to San Benito, Texas, where for the last 2 years of my high school career, my dad was home with me. Now, I was very lonely down there because I'd left an awful lot of friends in Oklahoma, and it was very difficult for me, and my mother was still sensitive to what was going on in my heart. And she ached for me in those early days in that town because I hadn't developed a network of friends, and you know what that kind of teenage loneliness is. You moved a couple of kids in the teen years, didn't you?
I sure did, and if I had it to do over again, I wouldn't do at least one of those moves.
Because it really can put them on the wrong track if you're not careful.
That's right.
My mother came to me one day, and she said, "I know you're hurting, and I feel it, and I want you to know I care about you." And she said, "I want to take your hand." And I reached out my hand, and in her little hand, she had a $20 bill folded up, and she just pressed it into the palm of my hand. And she said, "This isn't going to solve all the problems, but maybe it'll help a little bit. You spend that any way you want to." Now, my folks didn't have a lot of money. The pastor of a little church, you know, there wasn't a lot to go around. But it was her way of saying that you're important to me. I care about you. And it was our trip to Florida that we just heard about. And my folks passed the test. My mother didn't go in the bathroom and pray, but she found another way to get through that crisis. And my dad was willing to make that sacrifice as well.
You know, I've talked about the fact that Nancy and I have a grandson. You haven't had that experience yet and will in the years ahead. And we went through some growing pains, I'll put it that way, with our oldest daughter. You're familiar with that, who is now married and the mother of that grandson. And there's a little thought, a little twinge in the back of our minds that says, "Oh, I love you as a daughter, and I love this grandson, but we can't wait until he gives you grief."
You deserve it, and you're going to get it.
Just like Mary Glenn Peoples said.
You
can't
know
wait till she wants to go to Florida.
You know what, Mike? When it occurs, you know what you're going to be doing? You're going to be on your face out there talking to the Lord somewhere.
That's absolutely right. Remembering them in prayer.
Well, we have had one great day on Focus on the Family as we've honored mothers. I know it's not Mother's Day all around the world, but it's never inappropriate to remember the role, the significant role that moms play in our lives. Again, we appreciate Mary Glenn Peoples for allowing us to air that brief portion of her message. This program is provided by Focus on the Family. Our executive producer is Mrs. Bobby Valentine. Our managing producer is Jan Nations. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout, inviting you back when we'll next turn our hearts toward home.